Good morning. Good morning, honorable members. And for those who have not been here, welcome back to Twitter. And for those who have not been around, welcome back to here. Yeah, so I don't know if anybody has not been around in the country. If the case is, welcome back home. The Office of the Auditor General of South Africa. Welcome to our newest committee. Please don't object, honorable president. And the Department of Energy. Ladies and gentlemen, you're all welcome this morning. Ready to start. Thanks for joining us. We're going to have a presentation from the Auditor General, as we normally do, and then go back to questions. So, Commissioner Ted is going to give us the politicians now. I know that you did receive the presentations on this day, the presentation. We're supposed to finish at 1 o'clock. Hopefully earlier. So the Office of the Auditor General then received a presentation. Because would have had some background reading, but they would not have the benefit of having had discussions about students. So I suppose that as we move forward from here, so we'll get the entire presentation, but we'll focus us on the what are the remaining issues to concentrate on in the comments. So maybe you would be if you want to resolve the problem. So especially those that are existing. So if we can focus our mind on those ones so that we can see what the problem is. So thank you very much, safety apologies.
This is not very much early, so it makes sense. And then much larger, we have a family emergency this morning. And then the far we can vote to get the community with a far food unit around campus. It's also important to make the low
honorable Kubela Michelle won't be sitting the committee at all because of examinations. Honorable Hanetala will join us as soon as she's ready. Hopefully still this morning. And then and we'll have the two apologies for we'll have to leave at 10:30, 12:30 half past 10, half past 12. Is that acceptable? Can we have the presentation, please? And you are welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, for this opportunity of coming to you and speaking to you on the audit outcomes. Just to introduce the team with me, I'm Bottle Vessels, and next to me is the firm Body, and I'm an executive part of our auditor general team that works on some audits, and the lady is our guide to the hello ground of Parliament. She knows all the intricacies of the buildings so that we don't get lost, which is a very important function. We've got two documents. The main discussion is going to flow from the document that looks like this, that's been distributed. So the main talking points will come out of there. In summary, we also did the presentation just to make it easier. The Audit General has a constitutional mandate as a supreme audit institution, and we are part of the international auditor generals around the world, and that's where the supply comes from, international auditor institutions. And we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight through bodies like yourselves and as executive authority, accountability at the executive and accounting officer level, and governance in the public sector through our auditing that we do, and thereby building public confidence. Today's presentation is just to do a breakdown of the audit outcomes for the portfolio, and also what we do is we look at our six key focus areas that we've identified as audit agenda as relevant in the government sphere, and we also assess the portfolio performance in that regard. If we look at energy portfolio for the last 3 years, we can see that good things are happening, which is very positive. We had a move, if you look at the colors, we tried to also color code and to keep it simple, so the green color is good. That's when we talk about the clean orders. We've got two entities in that space. The one is sitting here with us, and apologies if the other one is also sitting here with us, because they're not directly, I might have omitted them. It is nuclear, the NNR, National Nuclear Regulator. On the yellow category is the unqualified with findings. This is the one that we'll unpack what the findings are there. So those are very close to being finalized. The last one in the blue is the EI. The EI had to be wrapped up, but it was involved in some issues and so on. So they haven't given us financial statements specifically, which we've received now from them, and we can start now that we can wrap it up. And hopefully this is the last time it appears on the slide going forward. Just to put in pictures once again. So we're saying that the overall an improvement, national NNR moving to clean audits, equalization fund moving up from a qualified audit to an unqualified audit, and then also DOE assessments are nearly maintaining their status there in the middle block, unchanged as unqualified finding. Unfortunately, next of course, the one regression, so with the good news comes a little bit of a bad news, but not something that we think is not correctable in the current year. If you look at the convenience, just unpack it, we look at three things when we do it with. We look at the financial statements, which is the money part. We look at the compliance with laws and regulations, and we look at significant laws and regulations that we consider, such as the PFMA, the Public Service Act, the Provincial Procurement Policy Framework Act, and that kind of act, and we audit it. And then also we look at the quality of performance information that the department presented us. With the performance information, we do two things. We start with the planning phase, and we look at whether what the departments and entities have set up is understandable, whether it's useful that we talk about. Whether if somebody tells you what they're going to do, you don't have to sit and have a discussion with them for an hour as an educated person to understand what they mean. It needs to be really that easy to understand. And also the compliance part of it. And then the second part you look at is what is reported. Is what's reported, can you rely on that information? You know, is that valid, accurate, and complete what the auditor has always referred to? And we substantiate that with evidence provided by the department and the entities. So if you look at the bigger area here that's of concern is compliance with those regulations, and we're getting to the detail areas of that just now. And also the performance information where there's some work to go. If we can move over to the Word document, let me just get us to the right place, everybody follows. We've got some background on the document, on the overview and purpose of the partner there for the committee member information, but this information is also going to be contained in the annual report of the department, which will also form part of the committee discussions and deliberations. Included in the portfolio, we've got all the entities listed here, the Department of Energy, Central Energy Fund, EDI Holdings, Equalization Fund, NEXA, NERSA, NNR, and Saneri. If we look at the department, and I think this is always an interesting discussion that we've got with the department, from the department, 6.5 billion rand that they receive, only 500,000 of that is used into 500 million rand is used internally for the department and its operations. The rest of the money is provided to other entities in terms of transfer payments for them to do the various energy projects that they set out to do. We did a breakdown here. The majority of the money goes for the integrated national electrification program and also energy efficiency and on-site management. So there's quite a lot of money that goes out to the entities to do the job of the department. This just is a summary of what we talked about in those other slides. Then, once we go to the audit reports, and we've looked at here, usually what we would find here, if there's any qualifications, we start with any qualifications, but the portfolio doesn't have any. So in the audit report, you also see that we've got an emphasis on metaparagraph. Now, an emphasis on metaparagraph is not a finding. All we do is we look at information that we think that the readers and the users of this information will find very handy, and we point them to those sections. So in the current year, there's a decontamination and rehabilitation liability lying in the Department of Energy's financial statements for the strategic past disuse facility that was created used in our weapons creation program. Now, currently, that was known as phase one. Obviously, on NEXA, they've currently got also the Safari 1 reactor that is currently operational. So there are more phases in the decontamination and rehabilitation liability. Sorry, it's a bit of a tongue twister. That one. That needs to take place. And we say that a process has been started between the department and NEXA to look at this liability to see who must carry it. In the current year, we picked it up. That the process started, so what this process enables is they'll appoint experts at NEXA, they'll assess the liability, they get a third party to look at it, and then also there needs to be an agreement between the department and NEXA of where this liability is going to lie in the future. If it lies in NEXA, creates all kinds of going concern issues for NEXA. If it lies in the department, either way, we have to go to Treasury probably for a guarantee to guarantee that money. So it's very important to keep this one on the radar. Where are we going with this liability? Then also there's been reclassification of corresponding figures. This is due to the standard art of accounts that are changing. This means that the Office of Accounts in general for moving things around. In the Central Energy Fund, we had a restatement of prior year errors. And also a material impairment. And this is things also that we just want you to take note of, taking assets that's been readily impaired due to write-off and impairment of loans to facilities, especially. And so there, there's also been a recycling to the prior figures, and they've made material losses. All of this information is disclosed in the financial statements. ETF has got a restatement of prior year figures, and in NEXA, we've got obviously the other side of this material uncertainty of this GDP liability that's had to take shape in the next coming years. Once we start now talking back to our presentation and our slideshow, when we look at the performance information, the quality of performance information slide, let me go one by one step. Let's go back to this slideshow where we talked about in the beginning of our six focus areas. Over here, we unpack our six focus areas for government entities. We look at the quality of financial statements submitted, the quality of performance information submitted, the supply chain management, processes, financial health, human resource management, and IT control. So if we look at the focus really for this portfolio lies in the top line. It's quality of financial statements, so that means the entities mustn't rely on the audit process to identify misstatements and to say allowed to correct them before we finalize audit, but the own processes must be so robust. Also the quality of false reports. We found a lot of reports in the entities, although we didn't find anything else. There were errors in what they submitted to us initially for the audit, and subsequently that has been changed. Now the problem with it is, if these are the things that are incorrectly presented to us, you can have a difficult time tracking, monitoring this information as it relates to areas to the information presented to you from the department or from the entity. And then supply chain management and irregular expenditure goes unfortunately hand in hand. You clean up supply chain, you clean up irregular expenditure, most of the time you start also cleaning up on your financial statements, accuracy of your financial statements. On predetermined objectives, as indicated earlier, we split our findings or we split our focus that we do into two separate parts. The first of the usefulness of information, and that goes around the planning stage of information. We find for the first objective that the targets are not specific, not clearly indicating the nature and required level of performance. And then 50% of these targets are not specific. Also, the targets must be measurable. It's very difficult to keep track of something when you don't know what you're supposed to measure. There's a very nice template provided in the guidance to departments. It's a hopper pager, but it's difficult to fill in. But if you do the legwork the first time, and it's presented also now in the annual performance plan of the entities, you know, what's the indicator? What am I measuring? Who's responsible for this? You know, how often are we getting this information? Is it cumulative? Do I need to count hours? Do I need to get information from third parties? How am I ensuring that this information is correct? But this is a very manageable process. It takes a very mature environment to sit down and to do all of this. Like I said, do the work up front, it becomes easier. I've got a slide also later in with performance information. Then on the second part, we also found issues with the reliability of the performance information for the objective 2 in the Central Energy Fund. We couldn't find it all. The evidence that was provided didn't agree to what was stated in the annual report. As indicated earlier, material adjustments, next item, material adjustments to the financial statements. One of the subsidiaries changed indicators throughout the year, but it wasn't approved by the executive authority, and they had the AMA to go back to what was originally approved. On Sunday, we once again talk about the usefulness of information. We had lots of issues there. To say that your strategic plan is where you start with all of these things. That should be the foundation. And then it requires that you must be specific indicators and they must be well defined. And so the data definitions can be collected consistently. A total of 40%, 46% of the performance indicators were not well defined. In the second program, we found, or the program 3, we found that 40% of these indicators are not well defined. On equalization fund, what we found there was that they did not prepare an annual report. But this also seems from the fact that they did not have a strategic plan and an annual performance plan. And I think also important to note that the equalization fund, something that can be fixed very quickly. The two entities that look after the fund need to come to a service level agreement about who's responsible for what, who's going to assist with internal audit functions, who's going to assist with the audit committee functions, all of those functions. So that at the moment they're hanging in the sort of in the middle between the two entities. So that's something that can really be fixed this year. So then you can have your strategic plan, your annual report, your quarterly reports, and this issue can really easily go away. Our second focus area that we highlighted at the top is procurement, supply chain management. And the first entity that we've got on here is Saneli. Saneli has lots and lots of funding. And the reason for this is that Saneli is currently relying on CEF to do their procurement processes. Now, to me, always as an accounting officer, I understand if you want to let somebody else and get economies of scale, let somebody else help you, but surely you've got to have some kind of representation in those processes to make sure that you get the answer that you want. And currently, if I look at it, if you go down in the document, you see the text, they don't. They don't do really well on the procurement process, but if you rely on somebody that's got issues in town. So that's essentially a focus area for going forward. And there are a lot of places that get this right, the procurement. It's a mindset change. Big thing that also came in, I think, is with the Schedule 2 entities now that they also have to agree on the preferential procurement policy framework. But I've generally found that these entities are much better equipped to handle this than the department. I think it will be a very a learning curve for them to get on board with this, the triple P and A, than what it took for the rest of government to get on. So it's also something that is really, really fixable in the next financial year. So debt goods and services were procured, the process which were not procured, the process which was fair, equitable, transparent and competitive. The procurement process does not comply with the requirements of fair supply chain management system. The bid document doesn't specify the criteria, but in any procurement environment it's very important that I tell you how am I going to evaluate you, and then I evaluate you according to that. And then next door also we found with the implementation of the triple PFA, the quotation environment was also not very good, which led to quite a bit of irregular expenditure in this environment. And this was also the quotation, the request for quotation didn't specify the criteria, the evaluation criteria. So these are simple fixes that can really be done and have a significant effect. On material statements to the financial statements, and this is possibly the area that is the biggest concern currently in the portfolio as well, the typical procurement. Where we found typically the processes are driven in government is driven by treasury, it's called department. So treasury will say you will do quarterly financial statements and departments will do it. But it's limited to certain things. On an annual basis, you usually sit with the big process the department has to, and there's a lot of once-off items that you do. And it's typically in these once-off environments where you start picking up the errors. Because you're only doing it once a year, you're only running the process for once a year, you can compare it to exercising, you're only exercising it once a year. And as a result, you are subject to human error. Now, the department has taken it very seriously on this one, the CFO and the team. They're getting us in earlier and earlier and to do more and more work, which we really welcome, which is the way to go. So throughout the year, you get red flags, and before you end in the department, it's time to do it. One of the entities that have really moved forward to do this is one of the test facilities, Petro SA. They have now engaged us to do half-yearly reviews, and half-yearly reviews on financial statements that they publish. I think that's the goal that we're getting to get the accounting information to the level. On the entity set a material adjustment to the financial statements, this means whatever they provided us on year end, on the 31st of May, when we audited, we identified problems in those financial statements, certain amounts that were materially misstated. So the entities in this regard is a check where we've got material statements on investments in facilities and associates and revenue, investment income and loans to and from the group companies were identified and corrected throughout the period. Saneri, I think, moved over to a new financial system. They moved over from a fairly basic accounting system to a more complex environment, which I think in its own is a challenging environment. But the main issue we picked up at Saneri is their project accounting. As they do research, the research is divided up into projects and so is the grants that they provide for this. So it's very important to match your expenditure and your income to a project. So this is typically an environment where your accountant needs to sit out of their office and start meeting the people that drive the revenue and is responsible for these projects. And so there's a few work that we have had. I don't see the manager, I know not all managers are financially orientated, but you should still have some kind of idea of what happening with the bucks in your environment, where is the rent going.
It led me to lots of reclassification, lots of misstatements. If we look at the table in the top of 18 evaluation of the conditional grant, that the grant that they get to do jobs with. And as a result, if you don't know what's going on in your project environment, you don't know what how much of the grant you realize to the project, because the grant says you shall do something with this grant. There's also revenue from exchanges. Exchange contracts, if you were interested, that's it. There was issues on the intangible assets, items were expensed, that should have been expensed, and they were capitalized, and they shouldn't have been capitalized. So it was a big mess in that regard. Hopefully in the new year with the new system, I was telling you to do a new system, run it and see if you get the same results that you got the previous year. That's usually your fireproof. If you can get that right, you're fine. If not, you've got to go back to the way you want to see what you've got. In the Department of Energy, there was an issue on the equipment that was stated. We're reducing SEMA. It's coming down. Every year that there's one less, we look forward to next year when there's nothing. And equalization fund, there was material statements to current asset liabilities that were identified by auditors. And this once again had to do with they charge rates and levies to the fuel company. And also on the FDA end, they're supposed to get either actual figures or make an estimate. And this year there was a big, the information was available at the end, but it wasn't used to come to the final figures. So in terms of the estimate, there were big discrepancies identified between when the auditors compared with the actual figures. So this drives your receivables, drives your liability, what you owe back to the companies, and also your income, what you can that you've earned. If we look at other material compliance, on the DOE has got a very tricky environment. It wants the DOE Act is published. They are required to sign agreements with all the municipalities all over the country. And this agreement is not just an agreement, it will specify which projects, how much money will go to, and how will the municipality spend it. If I could just take the portfolio committee back to our message from the municipal environment, that is the environment where we find the majority of issues with quality of financial statements, problems with performance information, and procurement processes. So this is where the department's money is going, and the department has to strike a very fine balance between, you know, entering into these agreements and paying the money and not knowing where the money is going. So the department has taken a different approach, and we've asked them to talk about it on the team, to say that, you know, can we not get to a different environment where we sign the master agreement, if you want to call it, with the municipality before we get to the DORA time? And once we get to DORA, we look at an addendum to capture the project, the money that is tied to this agreement. And this is really brought down, if you look at it, we're down to 13 municipalities. I think it's an awesome feat from Dr. Barnard's team. I still don't know how they do it. This is one of those that's really easy from the outside say, but the law says you should be. But I know from the environment that I should be able. It's a tough environment. If we look at SEC, there were issues with the audit committee where it wasn't fully capacitated for the year. The requirement says they must have 3 members, they had 2 members for the year, so the audit committee still the assumption they just didn't have 3 members for the year. On expenditure management, also, you know, the procurement environment also identified a lot of issues with the regular expenditure and persistent wasteful expenditure, so we left them with a non-compliant finding. And then also asset management, as a result of all the stuff that the material adjustments, you need to get a key of what you own. On SAIDI, for the majority of the year, also there's issues with the audit committee. Asset management, we have some issues, and expenditure management, once again, through this wasteful expenditure, regular expenditure, as in also the procurement of the money. So once again, in the procurement, you're getting rid of 2 major focus areas. The equalization fund, we've talked about, equalization funds does not have a strategic plan, and therefore they don't report on their quarterly information, and therefore they don't have
an annual report on predetermined objectives, and so therefore we have to write a lot about nothing in this case. Also, on internal audit, there was a big plan for internal audit, but due to this arrangement with SPEF and DOE, it needs to be really concretized. Who's going to be responsible for internal audit for all of these functions at the equalization fund? So we got an agreement, they would come back out and say, but they thought the other one was doing it, and we thought the other one thought that they were doing it, and nothing is happening in that environment. So the internal audit had a beautiful plan, they just didn't do a lot of it throughout the year. Also, we found an interesting issue is that the equalization fund is currently not listed in the DSMA. That also fell in between the cracks, so that had been from Treasury and headed into the DSMA as quick as possible. If you look at the drivers of the internal control, and if you bear with me, I'm going to go back to the slide because it shows the ones where we really concerned about. You can see the picture here. We classified it in three different colors. Now, I think usually, I don't know why our red has become pink. Maybe it's to soften the blood. That's still the area we were looking at. You know, we require the most focus. And there are really a few entities in that environment. If you look at the bottom three, the proper record keeping, daily monthly controls, review, monitor, compliance. If we look back to, take back to what we've discussed, it's really your quality of your financial statement. So you need to support whatever you've got, monthly recalls, accurate information. The more you do it, the better you'll become at it. Especially for financial managers, they is usually as the enemy. But the better you get it, the better cohesion also there is. I mean, it's a walk together. I need what they want, and I need to understand what we want from them. And the review and monitoring of compliance, that is the idea. If you look at your supply chain management, driving your material adjustments, driving your business and waste of expenditure. So those really are basically the key areas that we've got that are concerned. Now what we find here is we try to globally simplify our root causes. And, you know, if we look at, we're saying that, you know, we bring in the message. We meet the entities on a quarterly basis. We try and assist on previously focused areas. We can only make noise as auditor general. You know, we can provide you with the red graphs and the red slides and audit outcomes. You know, but the accountability for each department lies with the accounting officer to implement the internal system of control that works and hold those accountable. If we come to the performance environment, it's not necessarily to say, I'm not saying, you know, bring the big stick, but I'm saying, firstly, look at when you do a performance plan, take it back to do I have the resources? And by resources, I mean do I have the money and do I have the people to make this happen? Then start assigning all of those performance measures to a person and to a branch. And then I think you start seeing that there's also at this point a certain branch and they've got a vast number of indicators and measures that they must take care of. Do they have the people to do it? Do they have the money to anything to go to verify? If not, how are they ensuring? How is that accounting officer getting these people to provide you with credible information in terms of these reporting so that we can take action, that we can make service delivery happen? This is a critical portfolio in this country for taking it forward. We need energy. We need sustainable energy going forward. Also, in a few of the entities, we found that there was not necessarily the lack of, there were lack of competencies. Some of the teams, the financial teams, were quite weak. I know the majority of the entities, this has been addressed in the last year. The CFOs have been appointed, financial team has been filled. So hopefully also this will have impact in that environment. And then also lack of consequences for poor performance and for transgression that needs to be looked at. If you look at here, what we're looking at for the department and for portfolio, I think, you know, if we look at our major focus areas, what we do is we try and get commitment from the executive authority, and as far as possible, we try and pitch our message to the portfolio committee, you know, to get your buy-in in, you know, what are you guys going to do to make sure that this happens, and let us help track this to get audit outcomes right. Now, I know getting a green audit opinion doesn't lead to improved service delivery, But the way I see it is if our finances are clean, we know what we're doing with our money, we know how projects are applying our money, we know that what we get reported on the performance information is accurate and is complete, and we know that our procurement environment is clean, that I see as housekeeping. That shouldn't be the focus. That should really be the day-to-day business of a department or an entity without thinking about that these things should happen. If we do this and we don't have to worry about that environment, we can think all our efforts on service delivery. We can get to that slide. You see my slide here at the end. I hope I haven't gone too far. I see there's a prism and the splitting of colors. But, you know, to provide clarity, once we get all these systems in place, there will be clarity for those that want to see where we are in the service delivery. One thing that the committee can consider, and I don't know if you've had an opportunity, is the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation are doing assessments of departments on an annual year, and they can come and give feedback and provide you with a report of where the departments are. They also take back performance monitoring, the old predetermined objective environment, and from next year's strategic plan, they may ensure that there's a greater alignment between the 40 national outcomes and the department's predetermined objectives, the strategic plans going forward, to make sure that those who are responsible for the sub outcomes have got it in their annual performance plan. So then we're going to get to a really nice environment where, you know, we're able to measure what are you doing to achieve those 12 outcomes and how are we feeling as a country. So it's critical also in that environment that the department that we partner up with entities to make sure that they enable us to do this, to implement these outcomes. Then we look at assurance providers, and we've got everybody on there, and please don't show me right away to the bottom if you were looking for yourself. The audit general uses a very clean system. We say if it's not clean, it ain't green. Because we'd like to focus on this, you know, from the committee side and also from the executive authority side to make sure that we address these areas. So it's not limited or no assurance or agency or not established. We're either in the provided assurance environment. So that things are happening, you know, controls are there, but we need to make sure that they are working and that they are in place and that action is taken. Unfortunately, action is sometimes the one thing you need to start with an example, and usually that is conformed very quickly. You don't want to be the next example. But in terms of our process, we hear now to assist the committee. We pass the year-end reporting, as we look at the lower left-hand side. And it's not for the accountability time when you know, we get the executive authority and the company office to account to the committee and say, how am I going to ensure that these things don't happen in the next financial year? What processes are implemented, and the departments and entities need to provide action plans and report to the committee. You know, where are we going with this? What do we see for year end? Just quickly, I thought, because I didn't have the time with the committee to do our capacity building engagement. The portfolio committee is responsible for looking at consider, amend, approve, and reject legislation to look at the approved basis and monitor expenditure of the department and entities reporting to them. Consider progress from line function departments and provincial and local government authorities and entities on their respective mandates. So how are they doing and performing? Accountability, ensure that all the progress executive organs of state in the portfolio are held accountable for their actions of oversight. And then conduct oversight over the executive authority and consult and liaise with any other executive organ of state and make recommendations in the triple R process that we are currently in. This slide is purely for, I think, for information purposes. We put the time when the performance information was presented and approved by the committee, but it's basically to run to those points that I've said, you know, it's up to the entities and the departments to come and account to the committee, you know, have we aligned our plans with this national development plan? Do we have the resources to do this? You know, are the targets realistic? Can it be done? Are we going to say we're going to electrify all the houses within the next year? We all know it's not going to happen. It's not physically possible. How are the entities ensuring that the strategic plan and the annual performance plan will be achieved? So you look at whether there's performance contracting on the measure. Who's responsible? If you're responsible, I'm entering into a contract that you're required to perform on this, otherwise your performance contract will not look good. Quarterly monitoring. And then the entity should report on quarterly basis to the committees, you know, how they're faring on these plans. And also the committee can look at the annual achievement of targets, which is currently in this phase. And then also very important, if there are changes throughout the year which happen, that the committee is informed and keeps track of these changes. Because there's nothing like changing the game in the middle of it, in the middle of the game. And then also once again, you know, we've got our combined assurance model that we got. Where we typically your first level of defense lies within the department or within the entity. The entity should have systems and controls, the senior management providing information and task force responsibilities is your first level of assurance that, that the accounting officer has got it. Secondly, the accounting officer there to hold these people accountable. So obviously the accounting officer, according to the CFA, Dr. Barnard is responsible for everything at the department. He's one person, so he's not going to do it on his own. He needs to have the people supporting. And he was the executive authority. Then we move out to our second level and more independent types of oversight and assurance providers, where you get National Treasury, DPSA, and I think I've got a strong case that you put DPMD in here, but they're also doing a lot of monitoring and evaluation. The internal audit function is an independent internal tool that the entities also have. If they are worried about something, then the internal audit needs to find out if you have a right to worry. They are the people that must make sure whether your internal control environment is up and whether it works. Also, the audit committee. Is there the drawback to the model? Unfortunately, once again, is the audit committee, accounting officers, executive authorities is dependent on the information that's provided to them. So it's very important that your systems are careful up to that space. And then the third level of assurance provided is oversight mechanisms such as the portfolio committee, as well as national assembly that's like. Now this is my hard work slide. So we often get the question, you know, how does the administration improve service delivery? And we said, you can have robust and performance, financial performance management systems. We've got oversight and accountability. We've got commitment to ethical behavior. And we verify all of this independently. You know, we should get to an environment where we can really focus on the service delivery side. You know, get our housekeeping, get our house in order, house is running as it should. We can spend all our resources, all our time on getting our full base, making the services happen. And then I think also for the committee, we've handed out a booklet. The committee didn't get copies of it. It's a nice rundown of who are we as the auditor general, if you didn't know. What do we do? It's got an abbreviation of our terminology, and it's even got auditing in, like for a fascinating thing. And then at the end of the day, it also ties back the legislation and the accountability. Who's accountable for what? Who's required to do what in terms of accounting officers, senior management here in the last few pages in terms of the guidance. So if the committee hasn't received, let us know that we can distribute the booklets to yourselves, which makes for a fascinating thing. And they can also help hopefully in terms of your recommendation process, Jefferson, you know, for accountability and for actions to be taken. Because we look at things that are highlighted in here are failure to comply with legislative obligation, unauthorized regular food preservation expenditure, fraud and corruption, poor work performance, other non-compliance with legislation. In terms of our presentation, I'm going to go back to the thick document again, and I do apologize for taking the long way around. Overall, on business and wasteful expenditure, there's been small increases, but overall, the situation is be coming down. What is it?
No, there's no problem.
Oh, okay.
There's no problem at all there. I just wanted to participate in your contribution.
Thank you very much. The airline will be very happy with me this time. Hopefully I'll make the biggest allowance. If we look however at the regular expenditure environment, this is the area that we talked about. This is the supply chain environment. The state group is up there. The main culprit is the Petro SA group. I think we're all going to look later where lots of investigations are happening. So that's a staggering amount of money there. Also Meta, as we indicated earlier, with the procurement on the quotation side of things, that didn't tell you the typical PMA, and then Celine is the other one that's relying on the one with the 1.6 billion in regular expenditure. So do investigations there. There's currently an attempt at A. It's as a result of an irregular expenditure, it's instituted in internal parties and still in progress. And then once again, we've got the assurance form that we've just touched on it in the other documents. I'm not going to go through it again. And the commitments we've touched on the other documents. So then I can do. That's when I could go to the last slide. Say questions.
Back in the summer and say the environment looks nice. Carbon density, these are the factors that are just wrong. In fact, we've got to take what we do. So I've caution so we're going to be going through all of these, but I want to give you some tips from your side of what are the most system challenges that entities that we want to pay special attention to. It's a very clear view to resolve problems. We want to go. Honorable President, I was trying to take your concern.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Auditor General. I mean, your work in this area is invaluable. I mean, it's important for us to perform proper oversight of that we are provided with this info. So thanks so much for that. It's a little bit scary, certain aspects of this, particularly when you refer to SEP. And I see that you put the figure for irregular expenditure at 1.6 billion rand. Is that correct? That is hugely concerning if that is the case. I know that there was irregular expenditure of a similar amount, not quite as much last year, and they claimed that it was an accounting kind of discrepancy. But can you just go into a bit of details around this 1.6 billion irregular expenditure? Is it outlined here around proper tender processes and things like that, or is there other issues involved that we need to be aware of? If it's just expound on that, because I think we really need to get to the bottom of that. And speaking about SIF, or I should say Hetra SA, they also have entities that are outside of the borders of South Africa, such as in Equatorial Guinea and in Ghana, and I think they have in Egypt as well. how are those entities, in fact, audited? Do you look at those books and specifically look at their activities? Because there were concerns, I know there were different concerns around Ghana, I would have some concerns around Equatorial Guinea as well. So if you can give me some idea as to how we audit those entities that are outside of this. And then I see that you both have the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, I guess what it's called. I know that they got a transfer of 19 million rand this year. How are they audited? I mean, there probably isn't too much to audit that yet because they haven't started actual operations. But how does the spending of that 19 million come under your look from there? And then, I mean, the stuff around Sinedi, I mean, a lot of the stuff here is extremely worrying. It might not be as serious as you put it down here, but I mean, you know, there's no contracts and quotations awarded to bidders who didn't submit a declaration whether they're employed by the state, things like that. Have you gone into these actual contracts that have been awarded? Is there anything that we need to, in fact, try those in a way? Because you said the proper processes weren't done, but is there something more to that? Is it just an oversight that is part of proper processes, or do you think that there might be some contracts that have been awarded that shouldn't have in fact been awarded, and do we need to look into these? And if so, which ones, and what are you reviewing for us? Thanks, that's all for now.
Yeah, we normally take all the questions. I don't mind giving the nature of the questions and to this presentation that we get a response. I just want to add to Honorable Freeland's first question. I must declare my interest that in that first question it's posed.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, some of the questions I was also using question answering time. let's start with the easy ones.
Yeah.
Right. Petros and the foreign subsidies, as of the auditing standards, we do group and a consolidation audit. So we as the lead auditors in South Africa of Petros are issuing instructions to the auditors of it. So we find usually, I think in those cases, some of the big firms that are up in Africa, we've got a footprint there, and we utilize them to audit based on what we need to report on the site. So we instruct them, we get feedback from them, and then take that into consideration as part of our audit evidence to conclude the audit cost. So we've got a big involvement in the whole process. Now I'm going to, people are going to be saying, why either? It is there, but it's also not there. We're currently auditing it as part of the department and as part of the normal process. We have been met with the minister earlier in the week, and Dr. Barnard has expressed an interest to maybe ring fence them and have them subject to a separate audit in the current financial year, which we're more than willing to do. It's just they need to be very clear and get guidance from Treasury. What should they have in place? What are they allowed to do? We had a similar instance with an entity that was created in Treasury and ETSA. The guidance from Treasury on these things are essentially very wide, which puts these entities in a very vulnerable position. So if you're saying I'm auditing you, I have to throw the book at you as an auditor journal. We look at the whole pipeline, all of that. Now, for a small entity like that, you get capacitated to get an audit committee, internal audit, procurement process, supply chain needs, you name it. That's difficult to do in a year. But we still we'll be looking at the department to come up with guidance on how they want us to be involved in this process. But we are looking at the one. For the current year, though, it's been accounted for as part of the department. On the irregular expenditure, yes, it is 1.4 billion rand. 1.6 billion rand. 1.604 billion rand. It was completed, the element of 50 million as a procurement of our following a competitive bid tender process.
And then kind of the bulk of it, 1.59 billion, was where non-compliance was identified with that, where things were not done in terms of the procurement process. So it's very difficult to determine intent when something's not there or not done. If you don't get a document, you cannot go in order to verify whether it's another document because you don't have anything in terms of these environments. We did, however, try and look whether it was something received for it. And it seems that all of these contracts, there was, in fact, something received out of the contracts. So, but if you look at the non-compliance, as in the first time, with a triple EFI came into place, the entities have known about this for a long while. You know, it wasn't like it was suddenly dropped. There was a bit of a postponement. It's a nice shift of change. Because now, previously, we audited them against their own policies and processes, now they have to expand the policies and processes into the preferential procurement policy framework and regulations. But like I said, this is not... These entities have got staff and staff available to look at these kind of things. I don't see it as a difficult environment. I don't see it as a problem that cannot be overcome. You know what it is. It's not an unknown quantity. Go out and do it, develop the policies, train your people, implement it, and go forward and be happy. And then you can go and look, you know, monitoring the contracts in afterwards. Do we get value out of these contracts? Now do we enter into these big agreements? Just want to point out also, management identified the majority of the regular expenditure. So this is also part of the trend that we see. When you started with the procurement environment, the auditors picked it up. Then the next year, management were very proud. They picked it up, and you're still saying it's not a good thing. Even though we compliment you for picking it up, you need to now get rid of it for the next year. So hopefully in the cycle next year, we'll see a big reduction in this. Because that means you've taken hold of it, you've taken accountability of it, and you've addressed this issue.
and really kind of dig deep in it to make sure that it isn't anything untoward that in fact has taken place besides, you know, narcotic processes and anything being awarded that shouldn't have been awarded. Can you give any guidance on that? Is there anything?
I'm struggling. I don't understand. So if I was to ask you, this 1.6 is a regular explanation. What is it made up of? 200 million of this? What is it? I can't understand what this. Perhaps we don't know. We need to get to a point we can understand what this is, what the situation is. And not issues that we can say we accept it's irregular. But we need to understand what is it. Otherwise we will not be able to solve it unless you know what is it, how did it come about.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, members. I think that let's separate the two. Let's look at the first part where we're looking at the investigation. Now those are the two where we're looking at probably untoward behavior. And I think for committee that should be the starting point of the focus. But unfortunately these investigations are still ongoing, and I think because it also involves foreign countries and foreign entities, it becomes a more complex process to get information from other companies and from other entities and other countries. South Africa is part of the OECD that's looking at foreign bribery and has given a lot of thought to South Africa. They issued a report and they say, you know, our agencies don't work well together, we don't support the international environment. So there's a lot of big work being done and that's spearheaded by the Department of Public Service Administration to look at these kind of foreign bribery allegations and the investigations to assist other countries and to get other countries to assist in performing these investigations. So I know currently these two are, you know, those are the big ones that are being investigated. I think the best would be for me if the committee would allow me to go back to the drawing board, respond in writing and seriously unpack all these issues and provide you the information in a written format, and then we can take it from there just to make sure that I give you what you need, if you have permission of the committee.
I mean, that's a different degree appreciated, because really we don't want to repeat this next year. I mean, we need to be able to develop a career, and clearly when entities come to us, they will try and dismiss it as much as possible. I mean, I understand that, but we, it's our job to really delve into that. The other issue is just on these two investigations. If you could look at, I know it's probably the future, can't give us too much info, but which transactions are we really talking about here? Is this the Ghana transaction? Issue is this? Because I'm just trying to find the minutes, because it was said, so I think it was earlier this year or last year, that all of that thing was fine and it's all being sorted out and it was an understanding. But if there's proper investigations, I just need to know a little bit of details about this, if you can tell us something on that.
Thank you, Jess. Thank you, members, for wonderful members. The prosecuting, the national prosecuting authority is going to be involved in this case. The information, they report on the need to go, and we as Auditor General, our main job is to point out the error, and it's all for fraud and corruption, and management is supposed to react to this. Like you say, for managers to unpack, you know, each of the cases, what is happening there, you know, what is the understanding, because they're supposed to be informed on how this is going. We consider once the investigation is finalized, you know, what's the impact of this, what action is now going to be taken. Do we need to take action against somebody, and do we need to disclose anything in your financial statement? So we will try and get together to as much detail as we can on all of these issues and get back to the committee. I think by hopefully by Friday or something, just to give us enough time, to give the committee enough time for the editable articles. So that's hopefully you have all the questions.
Thank you.
Okay, look at the board.
Thank you very much, sir, and apologies for that. The investigation was for the overall procurement process within the VEC group. It was not just limited to one particular tender or project. So that was now overall for the VEC group to see what, how is the NCM processes and if there is anything untoward happening. So that's where it stands for. It was actually from the minister before Ben Martin. Yes, she was the one who commissioned that, that investigation that it must be started.
Another one.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just a few points. The first one is, we're talking about an amount of 1.6 billion. That's for this financial year only. 2013 was in the FNSM family. And if we consider this in terms of scope of the amount of money, 1.6 billion rand is 25% or one quarter of the total department's transfers to the state-owned entities. 25%, that's one quarter of the department's budget. So when the Auditor General comes up with this, we should wait until Friday to get some kind of documentation. I might say it's an unacceptable answer, frankly, because we need those, that kind of information now. It's the single biggest item in the report, and frankly, I don't think we're getting enough information to the committee, considering that this week we're considering annual reports, and we should probably have this information as soon as possible. So my suggestion would be that Friday is an unacceptable date, and that the Auditor General should have had something in writing, previously, considering that it's one quarter of the total answers, and this committee needs information before the entity comes to visit us, and that for me would be a priority, Chair. Chair, I'm also just wanting to understand how the Auditor General's comment was that management identified this irregular expenditure. Now, management are the responsible, I'm sure there's a bid committee or some kind of committee that's linked to management that approves these contracts. So I'm not sure when we say well done management or identifying the irregular expenditure, why was the lie to occur in the first place? This strikes me as a very strange concept that we're thanking management for identifying irregular expenditure when they should have prevented it from occurring, especially when we're talking about the magnitude of 1.6 billion rand. I mean, how do any of those, how does the board even still have a job, frankly, is my question really. If you actually look at the report, this is definitely the ugly stepchild. I mean, under every single line item, they're in violation of various requirements. And I must say, I'd really like to understand who is in theft real, the real the problem child. Is it theft in general with other entities? Is it Petros A specifically? Because obviously we've had theft come to speak to us, and they've always spoken to us from the level of a single entity, which makes it very hard for us to discern what's really happening in this. And I'd be very appreciative if the General might elaborate for us who we need to take a big stick to in this. Is it all of this? All of this? Is it the sub-entity? Because frankly, at the moment, it's still very unclear. And it feels to me like people are, at this point, hiding behind, you know, an amalgamation of results. And I feel that we need to stop distilling those, because I think my feeling is Petra today is going to need a bit of a talking to, possibly even a thanking. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is what I would like to know from the Auditor General. If there's findings and they put recommendations out? Do they give the department sort of a deadline to sort its recommendations or corrective actions out? And then if not, I think as a committee chair, we really need the department and the entities need to, when they come and present to us, we also need to find out and check on these recommendations and findings and see how do they sort it out so that it doesn't reoccur the following year again. Thank you very much.
Another one is this SPV. I hope that's not too much. Another one is it?
I also got a little problem with the audit level. Most of the problems there, the irregular expenditure, proofs and what sort of thing, different pick-up I thought of. This is also, everything is linked to the procurement process is not being followed. And that also could have been picked up by audit rules. My colleague next to me has said something about the different level of authorization there at CIRB, and I see on insurance level that executive authority just provides some assurance. That's not very assuring. Some assurance. And on the 1.6 billion I have already been spoken about nuclear. I think that we have now defended a couple of rounds of nuclear. But
what did you say?
I say on nuclear, I see it with no fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and I'm happy for that thing that we have now to spend a couple of rounds on nuclear.
Oh,
a couple of rounds. But what I'm basically saying in a nutshell is that in order to these problems, the procurement processes should have been picked up. There was on the previous year, there was buildings that were rented out without leases for something million rand, things like that. And it happened to maybe not as much this year or in the last financial year, but all that could have been picked up in the audit and prevented.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chair. I hope mine's not on the 1.6 billion and the new one altogether. Because as we were doing our constituency work, I just want the clarity from the Auditor General with regards to that some of our local or municipalities, why are you giving them a clean audit or an unqualified report yet they haven't finished their project? Like you will give one municipality will be given some millions of money for water project, for example, and as you audit their books, you'll find they are on par with what you wanted from them. But there is no water at all. Yet when that project is done, it's a finished project. Why are they given the clean audit? Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Sample. In consultation.
I'll start with my life and I'll take a part of my
further investigation. Thank you, Chair. On the findings and the recommendations, as I indicated earlier, the ideal situation would be coming earlier. You know, if we can come in earlier in the process,
we can help the entity to identify issues before we get to the year end to finalize the financial statement. The entity where this has worked really well in the past was Nexa. But also in the year under review, Nexa has changed CFO. So for that continuity to build up again, you may have a bit of a timing difference. So after each audit, what we require the departments and the entity to do, National Treasury has prepared a format for an action plan. And the departments are required to list the findings, what they're going to do to achieve this, and also have a progress column. And we frequently ask that if somebody like internal audit sign off on this, they can go and verify that something is implemented. But the difficulty once you have something, if you can do things only once a year, your due date is going to be at the end of the year. If you don't get it right the next time, you're going to sit with the same finding and repeating it in the year. That's why we try to get this regular financial information, especially in the financial environment. You have a full set of financial statements, at least quarterly or half yearly, that is then subject to interrogation. So that you know that your systems are sound and that your housekeeping is working as it should. On the procurement issues, I think we just have to explain. Management provides us with certain information in terms of their financial statements. They make a statement. In terms of the statement, if they declare the irregular expenditure, we go and verify that that is so. Then we also take the normal expenditure processes and we do a lot of work in the procurement environment to identify if there are any additional information that should be included in the financial statements. And that's the difference between whether we pick it up or management pick it up. I think Michael also pointed out that it is a quarter, you know, it is a heck of a lot of money that is being spent in regular expenditure. It is, thanks to sanity, it is subject to an investigation, you know, to see if there are any untoward business in terms of this irregular expenditure, which also would, like I said, if you look at the irregular expenditure environment and the maturity of it, like I said, the first time the auditors come around, the auditors pick it up. Management then get onto this and they identify themselves. I understand with them, but it is concerning that they still have this. But at least you've got the maturity in the environment now to know what is wrong. Because that is also of importance, is to know what I should not do. And now that you know what you should not do, please tell everybody and make sure that they don't do it. You've got to find yourself in an environment where you're going to have checks on the checks and balances in your procurement environment, where your committee will have to more thoroughly interrogate what they did. Have all the steps been followed? Can we, as a person, discharge our responsibilities in terms of the procurement process and say everything was free, fair, equitable, and transparent, and award these tenders then to these companies through our process, knowing what we've gone through? You know, so management has to provide themselves and board with the assurance that they have addressed these processes in the year going forward so that this doesn't recur. On the third question on the constituent we work for municipalities, I think that is what I started off with, to say, I do understand, you know, for us to come in and to say, yes, they've accounted for that financial information correctly. Yes, we can verify what they've said in the annual performance reports. Yet they comply with laws and regulations, yet they still don't do the projects as they should. We analyze this and you find what the municipality will typically say on water and sanitation and electricity, target not achieved. Now, a target not achieved in reality means that somebody's mother or grandmother at home is sitting without electricity or without drinking water. They have to take a bottle, they have to go to a communal tap, they have to fill it up, they have to walk back to do their cooking, their washing, their living, their drinking, their eating. And that is a discrepancy. Currently, the Auditor General is rolling out transversal audits at certain municipalities to come look at water and infrastructure, water sanitation and infrastructure. And the department has also expressed great interest in us looking at what we want to call follow the money principle, and we want to participate in certain of the municipalities to say, from an electricity perspective, what are the things that keep them awake at night? And what can we look at as a municipality when we audit this? We talk about these things, you know, we start talking really about these things. Where, you know, you've spent the money, but how have you spent the money? When you haven't spent the money, what is the impact of this? So I hope that satisfies your question, Mingo. Honorable Chair, may I pass back to my colleague, please?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dad. About the irregular expenditure for the first group. gentleman already talked about, the member over there talked about that in 20 cost spacing there were 800 million and then now it's in billion. Yes. The CCCF came to effect for Section 2 entities in December 2012. So the contraventions that we are referring to, that this 1 billion is made up of in the bulk of the 800 of last year, was from the contravention of that CCCF. So in terms of them complying with that legislation, yes, they did not comply with it from December 2012 up until a certain point. Let's say the audit process underway in 2013. So by the time they realize that they're not complying with it, all of this irregular expenditure has been incurred already. It's just that it could have been disclosed in the previous year, now we disclose it now in the current financial year because it has been incurred in the current financial year.
I would be interested to understand from a more macro perspective if we've seen a general non-compliance or increase in what we see as the regular expenditure across state and institutes of central government, the triple P. Because that would help us maybe understand the issues more broadly. But I'd be interested to understand the general issue across states and if that's been noted and because the people then need to start addressing how these issues are addressed. I would also be keen, however, for the Auditor General to provide us with a longer term perspective of the Regulatory Exchange Act. Perhaps a 5-year view, possibly you might think that when we see steps, I think it's maybe Tuesday, we have a broader perspective of how their financial management has been as opposed to just in the last year. Maybe last year was a specifically bad year, but maybe last year has not been that bad. I'd also just like to understand, I'm not an auditor, and I think all of us in the room have auditing background, but in terms of assurance level, I noticed that the portfolio committee is very rated as yellow, as providing some assurance. I'm assuming that we can probably do a better job and you're probably being way too kind with the yellow to start off with. I'm probably sure we provide very limited or no assurance. And on that front, perhaps Auditor General might make some suggestions as how we as the portfolio committee might be able to provide more serious assurance. And then my final question around the issue of procurement process, because obviously it seems the Department of Energy has a penchant for possibly not following procurement procedures, maybe it's just getting lost in translation. But we would be keen to understand, for example, who has the authority to request an investigation where there, for example, in our parliamentary work, we discovered that procurement processes haven't been necessarily followed, haven't necessarily come to the attention of the Auditor General. What scope do ordinary backbench MPs have, or does this committee have, or does it have to go to the Minister to request an investigation where there seems to be a possibility of procurement processes have been flouted intentionally, as might have been the case recently with Escobar's team generators at Kubrick. So, an issue that we cannot yet live. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I
I don't want to waste the committee time with this. I'm actually colorblind. I saw the young lady next to me. I was very concerned about this year. I thought provide limited of no insurance of this color, and she said to me, no, it actually provides insurance of this one here. So I mentioned it. But well, I'm a little concerned. Only how does it happen in order to to pluck more than 7.5 shortfall for the last financial year, the tariffs were just raised now by 12%. You know, how does this concern? I mean, you do the budget and the thing, that's the Auditor General's department, the auditing department's job to do that. Maybe that's why the executive authority is in yellow here, yeah. It's a disease yellow, that's what. The dark wash, I'll call it. So this is a concern for me. You know, it comes back to the consumer again, maybe because the department, because of that sort of shortfall of over 7 billion rand. Because the department maybe didn't proceed or see this. And I know, and it's also just an incident, I know the local government was mentioned here. All the problems of local government and metro and things, only 60% of anything built in local government creates revenue. So it is a very big concern for your department that the metros and things can't pay their bills through various reasons that I'm not going to go into now. And it's going to escalate actually, it's going to get worse. And that's why there was shortfall for over 7.5 billion rand, and it now came to the consumer to pay that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, I think when you compile your reports and SIF, I think that's great, and they're coming to that next week, so that will be good. But I think what we shouldn't think of the media either. And if you can also compile a report, hopefully it will be shorter than the dead one. And I think that comes as a Thursday. Because just looking through some of the points that you've made, I mean, one of them was contracts were awarded to bidders that did not score the high points in the evaluation process. I mean, that's a worry. I mean, that seems like a significant deviation. There might, once again, be an honest mistake, but we need to know what that issue is. But if you could unpackage some of the Canadian stuff as well, that would be great for us, if you could just highlight some of the details there. And then just another question around conflicts of interest. Now, this has been a bit of a contentious issue as well, because there is a confidential register that is held by the Department of Senior Management that compare their interests. And when I asked to see some of those interests, I was told that now only the minister gets access to that register. So it's very difficult for me as a member of parliament then to see if there's any conflict of interest. Apparently the logic is that the minister is the executive authority, is the one that has to determine if there's conflict of interest, that it's only her or him that will determine that. But then it makes it difficult for us to investigate that. Does the Auditor General get access to that register? Are you able to look to see whether, in fact, there have been any conflicts of interest at senior management levels with contracts that have been awarded? Because I think it's important to confabulate that. You know, I mean, it can't just be up to the minister to identify where possible conflicts of interest might be. I just want to know what the system is in terms of preventing those types of things. If you could give us some clarity there. All senior management, well, my understanding is all senior management of any department has to declare their best interest. Yeah.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Pardon my ignorance. I thought the presentation by the Auditor General was just to give us the report to say this is what we see happening in this entity or this department. They even came up with recommendations. But I think most of the questions would be directed to the specific entities or department. Because there are some things which is not permissible as per the guidelines. Now, they must give reasons why choosing to do the wrong things when there are guidelines. And also as to received these recommendations from Auditor General. Are they prepared to look into these recommendations and give us an assurance as to when are they going to respond to those questions in relation to the recommendations by the Auditor General? I'm just that, you know, because I think it is the responsibility of those entities, just, you know, to respond to these questions. But also thanks to the Auditor General. But my question also is, how often do Auditor General's office communicate with those entities? Because in some of your highlights, it is clear that some of the entities do not have even the targets which they are supposed to meet. In fact, they do not have programs. It's just a common sense, you see. Like the Honorable Masala asked the question of service delivery. I think the thing audit is just a housekeeping audit, like you indicated. It's not related to programs. Because you can't have a thing audit committing money only, not looking at the money that has been used for the service delivery. So I think we need to look into that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. I'm sure those were our last question. I want to suggest that we have a break. It's not a good time to have a tea break. It's almost lunch now. I suggest we have a break for 10 minutes. Copy, and then the Auditor General will respond to the question. Because there are two things we still have to resolve. Honorable members, it's not a tea break. I will draw my offer for a tea break. We still have to do two things. For the great error with regard to the time frame we should give to the Auditor General, certain response. There's a relationship between that and the work we should be doing next week, so that we can follow through on the space of the information received. So that's just going to be fun. So I suggest we break now. Secondly, how far back do we go? Honorable Makai, I'm not inclined to go as far back as we want. I don't want the old host unsolved the problems today. So when we have a discussion later on, we'll remember the issues the minister, both the minister and deputy minister, they reported what they said, that the Honorable Deputy Minister has been given, in addition to other things, the sole responsibility of dealing with these entities. I suppose it is part of, out of the recognition that there are challenges with regard to how things have been done. And, I do want us to look at the challenges of that, but that we can strengthen our oversight in ensuring that what the department promised to do, we can go and do properly as we move forward.
So I suggest you take the key now for 2 minutes, and then if the Auditor General can give us a like to respond. And I just want us to go back to the Friday Honorable Makar, because we've seen serve next week. That should give us enough time for them to respond. But if there are further comments, we can do that when we come back from this week. The second thing is, just to be prudent with regard to our use of time. I've been thinking that perhaps we should bring forward the presentation of the party. Let's have a tea break so that we can think about it.
Members, question on the implementation of the triple PFO pay. There was a general trend in the Sudan where the entity did not apply the triple PFO before sparking the regular expenditure. Saying that there are, however, some entities that show the opposite. They took it, they raised it, and they live with it, and they dealt with it. So it's really, I think it's almost an attitude, almost a decision. You know, you can fight the guy against it, or you can do it. And at the end of the day, you might still end up doing it, because you have to. As a committee, I think the committee has already started answering their own question on how does the committee enable itself to provide more assurance and to get to agree. This is music to our ears. This is what we do. I thought about, and the question was also asked, you know, what do we do and how often do we see these entities? We set ourselves out on a stakeholder initiative, a visibility to our stakeholder initiative, about four or five years ago. And I think if you remember in that title, the previous Auditor General is the Telecom member, we visited each and every single municipality in the country. I think it's a seat yet to be repeated by anybody else. But on the entity level, for instance, the Department of Energy and for NASA, I'm the stakeholder engagement. You know, we try and meet, throughout the audit, we meet on a continuous basis. With the accounting officers of the accounting authorities and EO, we meet at least quarterly with them to discuss the relevant issues, to give them feedback on the areas that we think are still a concern. We utilize the internal audit environment also to give feedback on how the key controls of what we call, how the daily disciplines are going inside these entities, and to track that concerning areas. This is a process, you know, also with the executive parties. We meet at least 2 times a year, we try for more, where they are, and where there's an appetite, we go. So really, where people want to hear our message and want to respond to our message, we really push in that regard and we build the relationship, which is really great to get that kind of a certification. On the question from members on who's allowed to request an investigation and email a desire that you don't have, it says that any person, institution, or oversight body can cause possible financial misconduct by an accounting officer to the limited executive authority, which has the legislative duty to investigate the allegations. It will also apply for this level. So if you've got an allegation and you've got a thing that you can instruct it through your reporting process, which is tabled in the National Assembly and becomes the requirement of the entity to instruct the entity to investigate and to report back to you. So there is a mechanism in terms of reporting structures to request investigation to get the executive authority to investigate. On the shortfall and the clawback of the 7 billion by NASA, the Director General, acting Director General of the Department, said that he would respond to the question if they find with a member, and if you're happy with it. On the context of interest from Honourable Member, the current Public Service Act makes provision for people to declare their interest on a senior management level only. This prohibits persons from doing business with government without explicit approval from the executive authority. The people that also test this is the ultimate custodian of the Public Service Commission that goes and verifies information
in terms of the declarations. What we also do is the Auditor General, we take the database of household and bad expenditure of the department, and we look across governments who's got interest in what and who's doing business with where. Typically the environment has now moved, the person has got direct interest and he's doing the business with his own entity now, it's becoming a sister or the wife or somebody else doing business. And we are unfortunately dependent on whatever information is available on these databases. And you'll usually find that if you're talking about an employee in a department, we still have personal full cases for spouse and for those kind of information, where in a typical entity, that doesn't carry that information. They just have the person who they pay. So we take that person's account. We are expanding that. We're comparing employees to the Home Affairs Register of married people. But also, no, that's not entirely clear. So we look at least if you're married by law and you're on the register, we can also include that in our permutations when we do the conflict of interest testing. And then we report these also to the department. A lot of the department have taken us up to say, guys, can you do it more regular for us? So that we can follow this up throughout the year. So a lot of the departments provide information on a quarterly basis to say, this is our raw data that we've run our analytics and we've provided them and say, listen, sort this out before year end. Find out who's responsible, who's conflicted and get these issues resolved. Also, if you look at the intention of the new plan, bill that is currently a bill format, that is clear tolerance for interest. That says no commission, no nothing, it just says no interest. That's required. And the plan will also, in its current form, will also then roll down to municipal level, which is also at least touching the third sector. On the entity environment, you're subject to the ethics and the compliance of those entities. What they approve, but I think also in some of the instances when they do the conflict. So we do look at that as far as possible with the information at hand. The problem is if it gets really devious and underhanded and difficult teams, our data analysis is not going to pick up at this stage. But we do have access to those forms in servers. Let me just look. I think I've touched on everything. Is there anybody that is seriously afflicted? Jeff, I think we responded.
Thanks for that explanation about the conflict of interest. So, to tell you rightly, you are able to see that conflict of interest database. I guess you do get access to it. Has there been any conflicts of interest that you have in fact picked up over the last few years in the Department of Energy, or is there any sign on that front? Because I haven't seen any kind of reporting on that after the system.
Not about this.
Thank you, Dave. Just before Dr. Barnard maybe answered that question on the shortfall or under recovery, that 5% piece that's now on the consumer, I just want to, you know, why didn't that threat on the blow could have been maybe been split out over a longer term instead of the 1 year? That might this for already cash flow consumers in this country might actually unpayable. They just can't cope anymore.
Just to take you right back, you were mentioning mixer and liability for the highly enriched uranium, and it hasn't worked out where that liability should be going. If you could just elaborate a bit on that, because at the moment I understand it. Are you saying the security in terms of keeping the highly enriched uranium? And if you can just elaborate a bit on that particular issue, because I think it is something important.
Okay.
one. That was the last question. I'll allow that one. I think I like that. But it's a general and then Dr. Bernard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good members, yeah, I think one feedback, I didn't answer or respond to one comment by the members. I think, yes, the purpose of this meeting is to guide this committee into the areas that should be prominent entities. And, you know, from our side, we would like to provide you with as much information as possible because it provides you with a balanced feedback. But the majority of this information, you know, lies with the entities and they are the custodians of this information. So, you know, a lot of that can also be obtained from, but where possible, guys, and we've got the information, we will definitely share it with the committee. On the conflict of interest, I think in the past 2 years we haven't picked up any conflicts where somebody from the department has got an interest and that is there. Also, the net liability is a very interesting scenario. The two or three phases that were created is the first was to get rid of our capacity to build nuclear arms. I think everybody remembers a while back when we agreed to this, we unpacked the facility, we added some fantastic flowers with some of the bombs and some of the materials, and unfortunately radiation is one of those things, you know, once you stop working with it, it doesn't just go away. It is in the building, it's in the walls, it's in the sensors. If the committee has decided they want to do this stuff, this is one of the most fascinating findings that you can. So what has happened currently with these facilities is all of this has been, they call it washing, it's literally they're washing it, but with chemicals to get the radioactivity out of the building. Most of the intention is to reuse these buildings. If you can't reuse them, they destroy it and they pack up and they battle, and they make the battle smaller. They make them bigger battles, smaller battles, and they store water and stuff like next time. So that was phase one, if you look at it as a strategic nuclear capability, because all the generators to enrich the uranium to generate the fuel, all of that stuff. Subsequently, the farm is set up as a research generator. So what they do is they don't make electricity, they create energy and they then do lots of medicinal applications and other applications for the radioactive material. Now what we're talking in the phase two is mainly the farm and the waste generated by the farm. The waste generated by the farm is currently kept on site at Nexa. It's a figure of 3 cube meters in terms of material since the existence of the fire, which I think is probably about 15 years ago. It's just an outfit, like, you've got this current nuclear reactor, what is going to happen with this? And a large part of this is also dependent on the Rwali creation, because they will determine the input for nuclear material in this country. They can say, okay, like, we decide now to store it in culverts or to do whatever we need with the material, but that's going to be the Rwali's job. Once they come into play, then get input for the nuclear radiation, and then we can decide, you know, what's our responsibility to, once the fire comes to the end of life, to recommission, decommission and rehabilitate this cost. So that is what we're talking there in terms of the size of this liability that needs to be determined. Because in terms of the previous agreement, there was also an agreement of where this would lie. So not only monetary value, it's who would take what percentage of it, because obviously part of this facility was still used in the original process. But it's just a split of that we're talking about for DOE and for Nexa to get to. And then, yeah, Jay, you still have your request. Just to also give a little guidance here, are we looking purely for the opinion issues that you want for us, like we call our silver bullets, what's the key things that the committee should focus on in terms of audit outcomes, or are you also looking for other things that have piqued our interest in this area that the committee should be looking out for?
I'm looking at a project based on all the things that you've looked at. Especially the big things that going forward we may want to focus on as a committee. So
Okay. To recap, from an auditing perspective, the stuff that we want to focus on is obviously the action plans to look at what went wrong in the past year. So the procurement environment is what we're looking at. Quality of financial statements, you know, regular complete financial reporting, interrogated, you know, to make sure that it's accurate information. Also, you know, getting the third was the procurement objective environment, getting that right. So that is critical to the expenditure that a lot of these entities are project driven like that. So the project will drive your reporting, it will drive your expenditure, it will drive a lot of your organizations driven through the projects. From a bigger macro perspective, you know, is a critical thing, and that needs to be discussed with, you know, runners from the department is, do they have the capacity or the resources to oversee their mandate implementation through the entity? Do they have enough assurance that what other people are telling them they're doing with their money really happens? Or do they need additional resources to look at it? You're spending 2 billion rand a year, you're spending 500 million administered, then I'm not saying this isn't enough. You need to ask the department, is that enough? You know, do they have people to go and follow up on implementation, on connection, on solar installation? So if we stop reading about it in the newspapers and all these other things, that they will report that something has been washed up. From an interest side, the new mineral resources development bill that talks about the 20% take gain. You know, I know it's not entirely DOE's responsibility, but it touches on the extractive industry. You know, are we ready as a government for this 20% extractive? Do we have the means to make sure that we get the 20% from the entities? Where is the 20% carry that I talk about? The state carry going to invest? Who's going to carry this? How is it going to be administered? Those kind of things. So from a mandate point of view, it's very critical to keep close to this development of the law, although it doesn't technically fall specifically under the committee. On DOE, we've spoken about the issue with, and I think the committee is well aware of the creation of the WADI, you know, to keep a very sense of how is it going to come into life. Sorry, I call it that, but it is not always as easy as it sounds, getting it set up to be a private entity. And I think the department will still remember from being sworn in the divorce from the divorce from minerals and resources and energy, with that happened, they were left on the short end of the stick. But to make sure that once we create the body, that we don't, that we also adequately capacitate them to be standalone and not throw them into the deep end. The other issue, I think, also Petro SA currently, I think it should come out under the SEF group, they currently underproducing due shortages in gas supply. So also to look at, because I think that has to do with a huge impairment that also disclosing the financial statements of the current refinery of the ability to operate. On NECA we've talked about it, WADI, the phase 2 of the liability, those kind of things. I said on the equalization fund we spoke about the getting to a service level agreement between the department and TEF about who's responsible for what, to make sure also that a proper process is followed and the entity doesn't fall through the crack there. We've talked about also, I think interesting thing is just to also keep, I think the minister has already responded to this, is to just keep track of the research projects in the different entities to make sure that the projects don't overlap and that the projects are complementary to each other and sharing of information. As government, I think we need to get out of the silo approach. Just because you say for you said maybe or you said doesn't mean you can't talk to each other. You're working for the same. You're working for the same boss at the end of the day. So just keep that of who's doing what. You know that we ensure that our money is working optimally. That we're getting the right research into the right projects. We're not duplicating any effort in some of the entities. Actually, I think that captures it from our side. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister.
you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. Dr.
Chair, members, thanks for listening to the AG. I feel uncomfortable answering in front of them because they know industry as well as you know it. I think this is all comfort. The issue that it's a very important question on the Israelis have asked about the 5% increase that was announced recently by NERSA. So I think I just need to make one thing clear. Which is that you can't answer on behalf of NASA, and I said, yes, tomorrow, but I can just give the regulatory framework that with which this has been taken. Now, internationally, it's a modern way of regulating these days that you allow, especially if you regulate over a long period. As you know, the regulation period window for ISCO is a 5-year MIPD period. So it's allowed that within that period, that in the year you're in, you can allow to look back what was the application by the entity, in this case ESCOM, for that year. So you go back and you say, ESCOM has requested for X billion rands to run the operations. And to run the operations, they need Y revenue. So if the reality, if you look back, is after you've ordered, found that on account of the revenue income, it was less than what was applied for, it means then the tariff for that period is then wrongly applied. Now this is what happened here. I mean, looking back in the so-called RCA process, it was found that 7.8 billion rand was less recovered for ESCOM to balance its books. So because of that, ESCOM was allowed then to come back to regulator to request for recovering that 7.8 billion rand. Now for the regulator then to decide how they're going to apply it, now if you converted them back, as you're aware that the MIPD period is 12% for 8% for each financial year plus minus, and then but with this 7.8 billion rands was added on for the next financial cycle, that this is the 12.68% if I remember correctly, that's been added for one financial year. The issue wasn't spread over 2 years. I don't think I'm in a position to answer that. It's a regulatory decision that was taken. So a year tomorrow, I think we'll see if I can take an answer. But that's just the framework, how it was what it was done, and we'll
thank you very much,
Mr.
Chair. We know that we have honorable members to call on this, but we are done with questions. I want to suggest, I understand the deputy minister is not going to be here the whole afternoon. I want to suggest that we get the first presentation up to a then break up as 1 and be back at 2 o'clock. I hope that doesn't disrupt any one of our arrangements. So that we can get the presentation and then allow the deputy minister to comment and for members to ask if they want to ask direct questions to do that. And then we can continue. That's it. Thank you. Thanks very much, Auditor General of South Africa. That matter of the Department of Energy and its relationship with different entities, including municipalities, vis-a-vis its capacity. Keep coming up things to people, and then when we come to we explain, say, no, it's only tomorrow. That's the phone,
Another feeling, can we start this with you?
Yeah, I just want to get the process that we've got of the start and carry back. Because are you saying that we're going to take the presentation from the past?
Take the presentation now, and then cut off past one, and then hopefully by half past one, then we finish the presentation, we can ask a first set of questions, especially those on members who think that the Deputy Minister would have been interested, and then break.
And then we come back again? No, but I said that I've got a lunchtime meeting, so I need to know if I've got to change that, then what time I
should. Yeah, come back. Remember, we still have to do the financial meeting, so we have to come at 2 o'clock.
And then what time will we finish?
We'll finish far earlier than we anticipated. No, we plan to finish at 5. We'll finish about 5 together. The Department of Energy.
Sorry, Chair, we didn't clarify the outstanding questions to the AG and the document that's in program. We had those questions.
Yeah, not for that. It was half a bad week ago. I think that when Honorable Australian spoke later on, and the fact that we see stuff is Tuesday, I thought we had accepted the initial suggestion by the AG bank to give us the response, the written response on Friday, or put it this way, by Friday, so that we are ready for our engagement with SF and the subsidiaries next week.
So that's correct, but there was a follow-up question for Saneni as well, and also we were specifically going to verify what the AG was going to provide us on Thursday.
That's covered. I had Saneni. I have it. I mean, that's covered.
And in terms of the survey, we're going to discuss what we're going to get and how far back. Because you won't have your admiral request for the information of the last 5 years in terms of the AG expenditure.
You don't have to sit down and see, no? Since we have excuse you know, number. In the initial response we gave, so we are going to look from the last financial year, is that correct? That man's doing a lot of work.
If I may clarify, the AG said give us a response to the current cases and investigation as much as they can provide for us, which was the one question, which I'm assuming relates to more than 1 year. And then my subsequent question was just for the irregular expenditure figures for the last 5 years, which is already public information, so it shouldn't be any transmission provided to us as a collective figure for the annual fix, so we have a broader idea of what's been happening at SIF over the last period, as opposed to just in the last financial year, because the other the General indicated that there was a spike in this year specifically because of the structure of the PPFA. So it might be a situation where SIF only needs a banking and not a thrashing, and that's what we're trying to clarify. So the AG was going to provide us with as much information as they could about the court cases, and then a broad perspective of the regular expenditure over from the past 5 years, so we can assess what impact the PPFA has had in terms of SIF's irregular expenditure figures, which will help us have a more balanced approach towards SIF. Thanks.
We'll do the 5 years, it should be doable, but the unpacking the irregular expenditure will relate into the current year, whatever is in the investigations, we'll try and split as much as possible.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim.
Okay. That should be sufficient. We'll fight with a lot of Makales about what we want to do about going back.
Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, thanks for this opportunity. I must also apologize.
Sorry. I didn't see you when we started. So
yes, that's how I was going to start by apologizing.
I didn't welcome you. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for being late. I was here for the 9 o'clock, and at 9 o'clock I found that it was actually 10 o'clock. So I went to the office and therefore got carried away. That was, I was not aware that we had changed the time, so apologies for that. Honourable members, I believe that the presentation of the report is coming at a, in terms of sequencing, at a good time because we've just had the report of the Auditor General. I also believe the presentation of the fourth quarter report, which happened in Pretoria, would have actually covered a lot of the issues that will be covered today. So I believe this is almost a wrap-up exercise to a large extent. But the discussions we've had this morning would assist in terms of maybe listing areas for particular focus and assist us as a department in a number of the challenges which I think the Auditor General has lifted. And among those key challenges, I think, and questions that we all have to respond to, and I think we've raised a number of times, is the capacity challenges in the department. The department was formed at a very difficult time in terms of the global financial crisis, and it was clear when the split happened that the instruction was very clear there is no additional money that will go into creating the separate department. And I believe the colleagues in the department have done everything they could to say, let's try and see what we can do with what's available. That has led to some serious challenges which have an impact on how we actually carry out the mandate. Among those key challenges is, how does policy making happen? I believe we all know that where you determine the policy is where you also determine how the benefits are spread. So we need to look at the issue of saying, is our policy making capacity adequate? And on top of the policy making capacity, the capacity to monitor and evaluate those programs that we make the transfers to. Those for me, I think, are the two main issues that will then determine whether this mandate, this very, very exponentially increased mandate, is possible to do with what we have right now as a department in terms of human and financial resources, particularly, I think, the human resources that exist within the department. So, for me, those are some of the key issues. Dr. Banard will take us through the report. It's quite lengthy, as would be expected. but I believe that a lot of it had, some of these aspects had been covered when we last met in Pretoria. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thanks very much, Dr. Barnett. And it's quite true, we did cover aspects of this, and we looked at the presentation aspect of this, when it covered the children's story, so we would know what else that I need to answer to.
Okay, Prime Minister, or members, thanks. What I will, just as a start to add on to the Minister's comments, as an introduction, the annual report has been submitted to Parliament, it's stable, and as been mentioned, has been shared as part and parcel of the fourth quarter report. Although it's 7 slides, we followed the instructions we got, but I'm okay if you allow me, I'm going to run through some of the slides pretty quickly because they have been discussed, and I think it's important that a couple of times here, that this has been used as a reference, can be rendered as a summary of the annual report. So if I run through some, it's not really on the eye, at least it's been rendered. So just, I mean, for completeness sake, we'll focus on certain aspects, and I will just make a key by one, I will finish through the 67 slides, if you don't mind. This is the list of the non-financial performance that we need to look at, and also then some sort of financial performance indicators. So this presentation up to our first one will only focus on that. The financials will be dealt with the CFO in after the break, which is another couple of slides. So this is just what we're instructed to consider. I think the OBF department has been done, so I'm not going to run through that. What we did to just summarize, what is the service delivery environment we have to operate within as a department? And there's no sequence of importance just as it will come. We have had, I think, numerous discussions on the education program. I think it's important here that although we're very proud of what has been achieved last financial year, there are some serious concerns that we have. It's listed here. We have discussed it also, I think, intensively. One of the aspects that we discussed very intensively at the Victoria that session. And I think that the big issue that these lack of capacity on the school side, that it's then the department's responsibility to assist in that. Now, the mandate of the department is just to make sure that the money is flowing, the project are correctly being allocated. But over time, so we did come to the position where we have realized that mandate has to change. It's not only a pipe you have to throw take the money through. You need to have complete oversight in terms of what's happening on the ground. So this is some of the challenges that's highlighted here. I think what is important also is that we have in the last financial cycle window 1 and 2 of the independent renewable energy program that have been launched, 47 projects in total. There, I think the process to get it on the ground we have been commended for, but in the rolling out of it, there's some concerns and there's some issues. So on the one hand, we have currently close to 9 megawatts of renewable energy on the grid, which are proud of 16 entities that's supplying electricity to the grid through this program. But the socioeconomic development program and some other infrastructure challenges that came with it, we need to deal with, and we need to deal with that in going forward with the program. You will find, I'm speaking to each of the topics, but that's the essence of what is on this one. I think the current license part we have in this last financial year, have done some, I think, good work in terms of running product management act, and then the regulations around it. It is also a issue at capacity and training staff in it, and that was then also the reason why we increased our turnaround time in managing this. I will come back to this at a later stage. And within that is not only the application, but also how we oversight of these trading license entities on the ground that we have to improve on. So we'll come back to that a bit later. And this is also in terms of the site. I think what is important also is that this agency that we, on the one hand, we are aware that we strive that to get more of
black African into this industry. And what we find is that a lot of these licenses is changing hands very quickly. So we visit the process also to assist in that regard, being used as a trading mechanism. So we need to stop that through not policy, but through the process of engaging these owners to realize that they need to keep on trading with these and not use it as a trading instrument. I think it's also important is that we find more and more money because we get more closer onto the ground. And the other side is better if the non-compliance is increasing in consolidated license entities, which is really disturbing, but I'll also come back to that a bit later. I think this another program, delivery, the program, it went according to our plans and to the numbers, but it's expected because we changed over from one process of rebate through the ESCOM to a local manufactured program, which will then be allocated in a different manner to municipalities. And the local content in 7% did create some challenges, but I can mention that a number of companies have reached that. And there's two aspects to it. One of the 70% for the tank and the collector, because you said all these are two components, but also, what we're very proud of, those that have reached that levels of 70% above, there's a number of them also is an S certification, which means it's at the highest technical and durability level, which we're very proud of, by pushing that into the local manufacturing environment that they could deliver up to that standard. Yes, and it took us a time to get that industry up and running, but we're going to harvest the benefits of that. In the electricity distribution industry, which I just touched on when we talked about the electrification program, the performance within that environment, although it's within the local government and ESCOM's and we as the extent of the mandate of policies, the oversight from the policies, we do identify the challenges that are currently within the industry. And I think the big issue is the way to manage and then within the big backlogs that have been developed over a number of years. Now, the figure that's been mentioned here, 38 billion, was at that point in time, that financial year, but we have subsequent to that, which is falling outside of the ambit of this annual report, have done a full analysis of what is the current situation on the ground, and it is much higher, the backlog, than what is listed here. It is just over, it's around 68 billion rand to the whole industry throughout the country. So what we did is important, we also then ran some pilots, because I think that's a very important aspect of an infrastructure. It is to run a real pilot. So we did some pilots, we have reported previously around that. It's a small amount of money, but I think the important thing come out two things. One is that if you can be closer to the local authorities, entities, assisting them in this rollout, you get a bunch more bucks for the amount of money that you spend. We could see how the prices came down the moment we stepped in and challenging the contractors and the consultants. Also, to be close to the disparity in the rollout, although there's sometimes at least we got a good turnaround around that infrastructure upliftment that we run as a pilot. The second aspect came out of that is that funding like this is a chance, but the biggest challenge is actually the skills and the lack of capacity to drive these programs to the ground. I think that is one of the big aspects that come out of this, which we know, but we have real proof of it. And we'll share, I think, what we also, that's just a summary, to go, just a summary of what our delivery environment we operate in for the last financial cycle. For quickly, I'm actually going to go through some of the fact that we as a public entity department, we have to, according to the public service relations, as a department have to submit what we call the service delivery improvement plan. Show to public, show to the parliament, what is our commitment as a department to improve what we have to deliver. Here's a whole list of those aspects again, according to hopefully just the sequence that we put it down. The first one, apologies, is on the new multi product pipeline. This pipeline from Durban to Johannesburg, which has been completed in the end of 2012, which at this point in time is just dedicated transporting diesel. we have the commitment that for the public that is that we keep this up and running and monitoring on that at the capacity that it's supposed to, so that it makes sure that we have secure the supply at least of diesel in the areas. The other issue that's very important in terms of our delivery as a commitment is the issue about being climate block tariffs. As you know, Chair, on the members, is that when we see the increase of electricity, and we just had that discussion where it's going to be for the end cycle 12.68%, that's an average. But what we have done with this policy is to lower the impact on low-consuming poor customers of electricity. And that's where the incline block tariff, it means that the lower-consuming customer is not seeing the 12.7%. They're seeing a 6%± increase. So that it is a less increase that a low consuming customer is seeing. That's done through a certain way of managing the technology of the meters to have that benefit. We have seen an increase, and we might see it even be more of an increase throughout the country. The progress up to now, 3/4 of the country have been rolled out this, although when we started off with a huge negativism against this by the utilities, municipal utilities, but now it's 76%, which was a real hard effort from the department and got that together then. But I don't know, I think it's important is that it also is the fact that it gives us a period of supply, but it's also to ensure that the customers receive a quick turnaround time when they apply, because there's huge financial implications involved. So the longer anyway, the higher burden is on for the investors. So what we have done is to say that within 90 days we will have a turnaround time for our applications in terms of financing for site and retail applications. 90 day turnaround time. We reached 97%, which is very proud of, and then also in terms of the site allocation for doing business, we have reached that turnaround time, which is 93% compliance. The other thing that's important is that, as we said also in the previous session, that it's one thing to look at, we're going to look at our financials now in terms of how our expenditure was done, and see if I'm correct, we think we're spending 99.76%. And it's also a question, you have that, this, and what is your delivery? And I think some of members can see that not every specific aspect has delivered up to 100% or beyond that, but at least we got very close to what our targets are. In terms of the compliance of the Program Product Act, I think it's important that there's some targeting set for the number of inspections need to be done. Members, I think it's important that I mentioned that non-compliance in the petroleum industry is that the quality of the fuel that we sometimes see is not what it's supposed to be. And the only way you're going to correct that is to be policing it, monitoring, oversight, and be in the process. So that is increased. Programmatic and also what I can say for this last financial year we're reporting on that we have acquired the service of a chemical lab, high rated chemical lab to ease analysis for us on a throughput that's high enough to make sure that we're not waiting months and weeks for results to come out, but we can get quick turnaround time. So that it will improve the quality of the product that the consumer is receiving. I think important also is the supply goods of our fuel stocks. The oversight of that is very important, and I think we can be proud of last year through a couple of big tight situations we managed to get through it. If you can remember with the funeral of previous President Mandela, was for us as a department quite challenging. Because we can mention now, remember just before the summer holiday period, so all our efforts were put on making sure that on our highways, all the reserve tankers were lined up for that, and within a quick time we had to change and make sure those reserves moved to another spot, so another direction in the country. So we're really thankful that we could, with the assistance of the industry, got through that. I think nuclear, safeguarding around nuclear, it is very important that the compliance inspection on that, we just had the latter part of the AG's report was focusing on that, and I think that gets quite a extensive oversight of what has been done, Susan and myself. And yes, as a department, we have that oversight function to do the compliance inspection, and 8 of these inspections have been completed. I think in terms of the relation and security, we also, as a department, need to make sure that whatever is moved into the country needs to be monitored, that we're not getting trapped in nuclear trade, illegal nuclear trade, which is something that we as a country is very wary of, and some relation portal monitors are being installed and currently in test at various entry points of the country. We can talk about energy and supply of energy, but we're not talking about the energy efficiency and making sure that it's done optimally. We will run into serious problems. I think that our scheme has taken off slowly, but we have signed various deals and assistance from specific business and not business as a unit, but business also as consumers. And I really can feel the party to assist us in the quarter that way. Yes, there's some still room for improvement, and we're also working on increasing and improving the national energy efficiency strategy. Until we get to that, I've mentioned the delivery that we only delivered up to now 4,000, but we're very positive with our own system, so we can increase that and that reach the 1 million level at the time of 2017. As you're aware, we're also in charge of the clean development mechanisms that make sure that when you are involved with clean technology, you can be subsidized for those projects. And this is the program that we're managing, and all the applications that we receive have been processed. You know, with access, we have done just over 3,000, around 7,000 new connections last financial year. We also implemented 2 integrated energy centers, multi-level energy centers, where we supply energy, access to energy in rural areas where normal private entities, commercial entities want to enter, but we got some support from them to assist us in Africa. If you look at an organization environment, the minimum steps are at all I mentioned that we start off on the base, the figures I mentioned there. We have also mentioned it in our discussion last time we were met in Pretoria. I think it's important that for now we have 550 employees in the department, and I think we're very proud of this. It's a very good cooperation that we have with our various water and chemical sealers, and that we have improved the relationship, but the benefits it brought for us. We have, I need to be corrected, but I think it's 55 current electrical engineer trainees that we just through our department through this program that supported being paid and operating at the different municipalities. So they're doing their practicals, on year practicals through our department, and we are paying for them. We did adverts, we screened them, and we placed them in collaboration with municipalities. The interesting aspect of detail that we now fourth year of this started slow, we went to a bigger peak, we down 35 because of the lack of funds. We can absorb over 100 of these trainees if there's no funding. We're working on that. Gulli is in here, they're working very hard as members of that committee, and we believe that in the next year or two we'll be over 100 of these trainees placed at a different municipality to assist them. The beauty of this is that none of them reach the end of the 1 year cycle and not get absorbed. Normally within even halfway through their training process, they get absorbed by the respective disability. So that's the beauty of this. Just as how we constructed, we have dealt with these different branches, which is listed here. I'm not going to discuss that. That's allowed. I think what's important is that in terms of policies that we've developed last year, the one that I think is called the integrated energy plan, where we have to look at a holistic energy plan after 2050. We have done that. We have reviewed it through stakeholder engagement. Linked to that is then also your integrated resource plan, which specifically is electricity security supply, and then how it's going to fit into the broader aspect, not only in own generation, but also in the region. That has been revised and taken through the process. We're talking about the pre-financial cycle. And then also the digitalization of the plan that have been started and drafted in its first phase, and that has also been done in the last financial cycle. I think it's also important that we, important aspect that's outstanding is the biofuels aspect, and then the framework how to manage biofuels, blend it into the mainstream of petroleum, and the subsidy schemes is something that started last year, which we now busy to finalize, getting it through approval stage. I think with it also is LPG. LPG that we remember last year, we haven't run into problems around the previous winter months because there's also some oversight to ensure security supply through imports, but it's important that we also control more security to the level where the product LPG, when it reaches the gate, refining gate, that the price is reflective of the product. I have mentioned about a renewable IPP program. Yes, just the biggest, I'm just going to flip through here, Chair, and I just, yes, there's a province, the provinces is different allocations of numbers. I think I just want to pause. I just want to say that on the social economic development program, we need to relook because the effect what we plan for what happened on the ground is not the same. We planned, there was something being planned, it was rolled out, it come out that the 50-kilometer radius aspect is not really giving us benefit that we would like it to be. So we need to rethink that in a way forward. But I also mentioned that these two ways of social economic beneficiaries that can be the models that are utilized by the IPPs. The one is where the community is being given certain percentage of ownership of that specific IPP development, or the community can then get a social community trust where they can then receive some benefits out of the profits of this IPP. So there's two options, but it's where there is a big concern in the build program, there is a lack of local participation, and that needs to be addressed among others. But I think also in terms of the program, overall program, that we need to consider also is some of the current challenges in terms of access to the grid, and where we put these IPPs down that I need to dovetail with our transmission lines are accessible to. If we just go to the original report, we have seen so I can deal with that. Look at the United Nations Millennium Development Goals, the so-called NDC. There are two of them that we are, sorry, there's 1, 3, 7, 8 that we're involved with. And we contribute at the department, and I'm going to deal with each of them, but it ranges from relation to poverty through the way we roll out our access to electricity and also health implications on the way from perfume to electricity up to the point where we are looking at clean energy technologies and so forth. If you look at the strategic outcomes last year, of 12, that changed to 14 of those 12. We as the department are not leading one of them over, participating in a number of them in 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are the ones that we are involved with. And it is given there what we are our contribution in those respective outcomes, Honourable Chair. On the PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Committee, which consists of 18 so-called strategic integrated projects, which is focused on different technologies or different areas in the country. Of those, the department is chairing one and co-chairing two to the minister, but the department also of 10 others, and it's just been listed here, the one that's been chaired by the department is integrated municipal infrastructure, so-called SIP 6, and SIP 8, the green economy, SIP 10, transmission distribution. So we involved that just as an highlight of what our contributions are on these tables. If we go to the state of the nation, there's specific aspects that have energy relation or other relations that we just connect that we can't. And I think, yeah, we did allude to it also in previous engagements with the committee. There's a, it's been here for notification that it, what happened or has been the marching orders to receive in the States of Nation Press has been taken into different components, and we're detailing our programs and our strike plan around that to see how we can make sure that we implement what have been the marching orders received. So you can just go through and see the nuclear program, the renewal IBP, solar geyser program, electrification program, the issue about access of energy to the INC, the issue about specific towns in the country that have been mentioned, specifically in the Cape Town in the Northwest. We're focusing on how we can assist in ensuring the backlogs on that specific town to be addressed. This is what we have written here. The solar geyser program again came up, and then I think right at the end, it's just the number of connections that have been made. And then I think the issue of illegal connections, which is an issue that is really harming the industry, and we also deal with that as part of the discrimination risk. I think the issue of corruption, we have a department anti-fraud and corruption policies in place, and we have also a discussion around that just now through the discussion of the Auditor General. The last part that I wanted to just in terms of the certain nation risk is the involvement of the department within the within SADC, and then in a broader context, and then BRICS fulfills a huge energy component, so our involvement there is also growing. The international breakdown, I think what is important there is that the largest activity right now, except for the current programs in terms of water supply to the country, that's general electricity for the African countries, also the Comorabasa scheme and the gas that's been developed in African countries, is the major one, is the Grand Inga. And as we mentioned here, largest part of parcel of what we have done, we have started with implementing and designing the treaty, but this year, as you recently, the agreement, the energy agreement between the two countries have been signed here in Cape Town in August. Rather, in terms of the international activities, I think what is important is that in terms of our involvement in our import of crude oil from Africa is growing steadily, and then also as a country, we fulfill our role to partner with our neighboring African countries. The SOE oversight, I think I'm just going to just really run through it because I think it's quite an intensive discussion during the originals presentation on this. And I think the major point, what the Deputy Minister has made, our oversight on the SOEs have to increase because of the fact that they're growing, they're getting more involved in critical economic development activities. That's crucial for the country, and it's a life function department and government. We need to have the oversight to be improved. The ways that we are doing right now with our growing that unit, but in terms of just the way of managing it, the way they have to report, the frequency of reporting, the linkage between us and the Auditor General, and stuff approved around this. So all of that is process that we have implemented to ensure that we can have a better oversight. But that being said, there's still room for improvement, and we're working on that, Honourable Chair. I think it's important that we can do a lot of good things, but if we're not having the communities and involving the communities on basic energy related aspects, we're not gonna be successful. So I can announce, Honourable Chair, that last year the Minister and Deputy Minister, last financial cycle, had 45 public engagements. And on top of that, we as a department have 15. So if you look at that, it means that basically we had a function each week somewhere in the country. And all of these are taking place in rural areas. And so if you sometimes walk into the department or you don't find us there, it's not really always in coffee breaks. We sometimes also in rural areas. I just enlighten it. I think it's important that the committee takes to know that at least once a week we're somewhere launching something or engaging with communities, doing educational engagement on energy matters, training, fugitive electricity, dangerous electricity. We also linked up with the Petroleum Association to prevent these terrible, terrible fires we found out. The one that's just recently in Johannesburg on Sunday, to initiative to move away and to prevention. Then I think it's important that as a department, as government, we have responsibilities. Oversight's been done by the Department of Monitoring and Information in the Presidency, where they look at all aspects, and also the planning function is also known as there, so that we make sure that how we plan, how we develop the strategy is in line with National Development Plan. That year, I promise that I will be finished before 1:30, and according to my watch, it's 1:59.
Agreement, and I'm not talking about the nuclear one. I'm actually talking about the Grand Inga one. I was just interested.
It's for now.
Yeah, it is for now. Okay. I was just interested. I did see we signed the takeoff agreement. I think it was for 2,500 megawatts. Was there any stipulation around what price we would buy that energy for? Because clearly, you know, we don't want to lock ourselves into something that would be too expensive. I was just interested how you're going to negotiate that price and what exactly you have locked yourselves into.
Thank you, Chair Pedro. I'm glad you're right, you're asking the right question. No, obviously this is an issue of concern, and if you had signed of the treaty which is supposed to be ratified, there are a number of provisions around it. So there was general agreement that we would always have the first opportunity in terms of FTA, would have the most favorable prices. Obviously, the prices will be determined by a number of issues, the transmission lines and all that. But the actual price, because it depends on all those issues, has not been determined. But we would be involved in setting up the team that would be working with the DRC's component, that would be running the project, would make inputs into there. There's a whole range of opportunities that this is going to open, where South African businesses as well are going to be invited, and would, to a certain extent, would want them to have some preferential access and all those things. So those are issues that will come to you. So when you actually see the treaty, you'll see that there's a broad framework, but with each step and with each stage of the seven stages, we would be setting up teams and looking and negotiating specifics around that. So it's quite an involved process, but you will be, it's a process that you will get involved in, because we believe that that energy in the end is going to end up being the cheapest source of energy that we will have.
Yeah. Honourable, we've obviously just had the meeting with the Auditor General, and obviously the issue that was raised around SEF and the 1.6 billion that seems to have gone towards the regular expenditure. I know that the Minister has been a great fan explaining how you are responsible for SOEs and the sub-entities within the department, and I was wondering, without preempting the conversation from SEF, what steps you might already be considering to rectify the situation.
Can I go ahead?
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. I think even before I came into the department, in terms of the oversight, there had already been processes that have begun and had been enforced in terms of the restructuring within SASITA. So I think the reports, when they come and report here, will be showing that what has happened from the last time to now and what steps, what steps are being taken. So the issues around the procurement processes, how those are being managed, I think those details will come on, will be presented to you. From when I've been with the department, I spent at least maybe 2 months just trying to understand the beast and what it deals with. The immediate challenges that we have looked at and things that we're trying to look at is mainly around the issues of governance. The governance structures have been problematic, not only at a set level, but in terms of the subsidiaries. So we are looking at, for instance, in the Petro SA board, I think we've got 3 members whose contracts have expired, so they're almost there on a month-to-month basis. So we need to change that. Secondly, they've raised issues just around the profile of some of the board members in terms of technical skills, so that they can actually have proper oversight. So we do have people with legal and with some accounting skills and so on, but we don't really have too many on the board with the requisite skills for the particular industry. So that's another matter that we're looking at and wanting and putting, proposing board members would come and assist with those kind of issues. In terms of the specifics of that, the money and what had happened. I've had discussions, but I'm loath to actually get into details because I think the investigation and what's happening, I don't want to work on the basis of rumors. I think the ones that has been finalized, it will be easier to then come and discuss those issues in detail and give you facts and not opinion, so to say. The minister has delegated the responsibility of SMEs, but because I think there are so many different things that need to be happening, one of the first things I'm looking at in the department is that the COO's office receives the reports and has been quite diligent in terms of looking at the finances and all those things, but I found there was a bit of a mismatch which we're looking into in terms of saying the COO's office doesn't have the skills in terms of the substance of those. So we're trying to look at almost a dual reporting where there will be a financial there because there's some good auditing capacity there, but looking at the substantive reporting to the substantive branches so that we don't deal with always the after effect, but we can deal with those issues as they arise because they'll be managed by people who actually understand what's going on there. So those are just some of the immediate things that we thought we can do. So which also helps the SOEs because then they can speak to people who actually understand what they're talking about. So it's just some of those immediate things that I have looked at. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Another member, can we back at? I'm told you don't have to stretch your legs outside. So quarter past 2, and the 10 minutes, so we won't be here when we come back.
You can always send the questions in.
We're meeting next door.
I will. I will.
Another one of us, we're meeting next door. Next door when we come back. And please send the constructive question about nuclear, the same you just posed on.
I don't want to question the motion because we are saying it's probably the same thing. But it's just one is in front.